From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Healthy Homecast. Healthy Homecast is created and operated by HealthyPainting.com. Healthy Homecast is a unique audio source for information, education, consultation, news, events, and fun. Each episode will introduce and connect you with services, products, practices, organizations, and groups that focus on health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community of all. Find us on the web at www.healthyhomecast.com. And now your host, Daryl Whalen.
Welcome to episode 19 of Healthy Homecast. Tony and I are here with Jeff Hogan from Killer Whale Tales. We will be talking about, amongst other things, environmental literacy, long-term ownership, particularly in children of the environment, the recovery of the southern resident killer whales, and the habitat that supports them. Before we begin, here are some upcoming events that are happening in and around our area. Take it away, Tony.
It's time to spotlight some healthy, fun, and informative events that are happening throughout the Puget Sound area and beyond.
Alrighty, and welcome to the events. First up, we have the Net Impact National Conference. This will be taking place Friday, October 28th, beginning at 8 a.m., going through Sunday, October 30th, ending at 4:21 p.m. It's going to be located at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon. Join Net Impact as we bring our 19th annual conference to Portland, Oregon, and discuss changing the world through business with 2,600 of our members and community friends. Together, the world's most effective change makers and most promising leaders will explore where creative problem solving and playful approaches can lead to serious solutions, where sustainable innovations were championed by those you least expect, and where unlikely partnerships accelerate change. This year's keynote lineup features game-changing corporate leaders, nonprofit visionaries, and innovative entrepreneurs, including Sally Jewell, President and CEO of REI, Lord Michael Hastings of Sarisbrick, Global Head Citizenship and Diversity of KPMG International, Hannah Jones, Vice President of Sustainable Business and Innovation at Nike, Daryl Hammond, CEO and co-founder of Kaboom, Vale Horton, CEO of Keen Mobility in Portland, and Jen Bolden, Green Business Entrepreneur. Professionals will have several exclusive opportunities designed just for them. You can participate in professionals-only breakout sessions, no-host dinners, and guru sessions with the experts. Choose from several deep-dive sessions that will skip high-level overviews, instead focus on furthering functional knowledge. Attend professional-only networking events like special reception on Friday evening. And hold casual meetings and network in the designated professionals lounge. We will host 300 leading speakers in 100 sessions. We will be infusing our schedule with more interactive formats, fantastic local content from our partners in Portland, and opportunities to customize your own experience. Our program will cover a wide variety of topics, including corporate impact, energy and clean tech, environmental and natural resources, social innovation, international development, finance and investing, career and professional development, and Portland impact. For more information, visit www.conference.netimpact.org. Next up is Pedal Driven, a bike-umentary. This will be taking place October 21st at 7 p.m. Doors will open at 6:15 p.m. and the location is 222 Yale Avenue North in Seattle. In the pristine forest above Leavenworth, Washington, there exists a world of hidden trailheads and candlestick trails. Here, a sect of outdoor enthusiasts, extreme mountain bikers called freeriders, has gone underground. They are the skate punks of the forest, unwelcome and under pressure to leave. The locations of their trails are carefully guarded secret, and the riders who keep them constant vigil on the lookout for U.S. Forest Service Rangers. But they won't leave. Each time one of their trails or jumps is destroyed, they sneak back and rebuild, believing that they have the right to ride through these landscapes. And now, in an effort to combat the problem, local district rangers have been given heightened authority to put any free riders caught on undesignated trails directly in jail. Ironically, it can be argued that both sides are fighting for the same thing. The rights of Americans to play in the woods, the free riders want the freedom to ride through the natural sanctuaries that are our public forest lands. The U.S. Forest Service is acting to fulfill its legal obligation to administer those same lands for the use and enjoyment of the American people. The documentary Pedal Driven will take you behind both sides of this confrontation, riding with the free riders and chasing them down with the rangers. In an exploration of issues increasingly important to all Americans, with ever-increasing population and a finite supply of unspoiled wildlands, the sense of urgency around protecting and preserving these national treasures only grows. Pedal Driven examines the shared philosophies of stewardship, sustainability from both sides, and ultimately offers examples in ways in which opposing factions can find common ground in defense of our common grounds. Following the film, we will host a moderated discussion about the state of local trails featuring Mike Westra from Evergreen Mountain Bike Alliance and Kat Stewart from Trips for Kids, Dirt Core, and Cascade Bicycle Club. And last but not least is the Halloween Haunted Toxic Tour. This will be taking place Sunday, October 30th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Join the DRCC and TAG community members and agency representatives for this two-hour tour to learn about the cultural and natural history of the Duwamish River. Pollution hotspots, past and future cleanup areas, habitat restoration sites, and the eerie haunted history of the river and surrounding neighborhoods. For more information, contact Alberto at 206-453-9803 or email alberto@duwamishcleanup.org. Feel free to contribute by sending any upcoming events that focus on health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community to info@healthyhomecast.com. And now, back to Healthy Homecast.
Thank you, Tony. Links to those events will be posted along with this episode. Last episode, we spoke with Bill Daly about healthy coatings. And on our next show, we are scheduled to speak to Dan Morris about indoor air quality. Right now, let's get rolling with Jeff Hogan. Thanks for joining Healthy Homecast. Please tell us who you are, what you do, and explain the detail of how it works.
Thanks, Daryl. So I'm Jeff Hogan. I'm the executive director of Killer Whale Tales, and we are a nonprofit organization based in Seattle, Washington, that gets elementary school students involved in the conservation of southern resident killer whales. And as you probably already know, the southern resident killer whales is the community of killer whales you most frequently see here in Washington state waters. So our program is three-pronged. We do visit schools throughout the state, and last year started adding Oregon and California as well. When we visit the school, we do an hour-long storytelling presentation about a little boy who dreams of becoming a killer whale. So it's pretty much my story. So through that story, and it's a slideshow, a PowerPoint, the kids learn the basic behavioral biology of the killer whales, the issues that are affecting them, and things that they can do at their house to protect them. The second part of the program, we usually go back to the classroom and turn students into orca scientists. And we've created many games based on current and past orca research projects. And we try to get the kids the experience of what it's like to be a field researcher. So they get to play with the same data that the researchers collected. They come to their own conclusions. And basically, they do the same study, except they do it in a classroom. And then the third component is we ask those students who did participate to go home and make their homes orca safe. We have them take a look at their ecological footprint, whether it's power consumption, water consumption, recycling. We've even asked them to take a look at the levels on their vehicle's tires to make sure their tires are properly inflated. But just to give them a sense that not only have they learned about these animals, they obviously care about these animals, but they can go home and do something at their homes that's going to help protect the endangered whales. So it is about empowerment.
Great. When and why did you start this?
When? Let's see. Well, if you go way back, I first got interested in killer whales in the 70s.
Have killer whales back then?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually first ran into killer whales at SeaWorld. It's the first time I saw them, and I was impressed. I mean, it wasn't like as big as Star Wars to me, but I got a stuffed killer whale, which I slept with for many years, which I actually still have. So I got interested then. Killer Whale Tales, I didn't start that program until 2000. And at the time, I was working at the Woodland Park Zoo, and I got asked to write an article for one of their in-house magazines about a local Northwest issue. And so I picked orcas. I figured, well, I'll use this doorway to go talk to the orca researchers and find out what's going on. And what I found out was actually pretty appalling. At the time, there were 79 total killer whales in this population left, and that was news to me. The reasons they were disappearing was news to me, and I figured, geez, if there's somebody like me who's interested in killer whales and is actually, you know, looking for stories about them in the newspaper and paying attention, and I haven't heard anything, other people obviously hadn't either. So in 2000, on the way back from writing that article, I said, geez, what can I do? So I have a background in education, a background in theater, photography. And I said, okay, I'm going to roll everything I do together into this program and call it Killer Whale Tales. And literally on the way home, on the ferry trip home in 2000 from that trip, on a little steno pad, I wrote on a piece of paper exactly what I wanted to do. And in about 30 minutes, Killer Whale Tales was laid out. You mentioned the universe. The universe laid it out for me. And I still have that little steno pad. And actually everything that Killer Whales has become was laid out that ferry trip in 2000. So... yeah, I mean, it was handed to me, or it was my purpose in life. I don't know, but it's taken care of itself pretty much since day one.
Sweet. So you said 79 at the time. What are we looking at now, approximately?
Oh, a whopping. I think we're up to 86.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we're on a. I don't want to say we're on an upward trend. It's up and down every year. There's not a lot of fish this year, and there's been a couple studies that have come out. Within the last couple of years that obviously are directly linking Chinook salmon to the orca population. And this year is not looking promising Chinook-wise so far. At least it wasn't in June when I left San Juan. So, I don't know. 86 is a pretty soft number, I think.
Yeah.
You'd like to see it go up, but there's no food.
It's better than seeing it go down.
Yeah, it is definitely seeing it. And it's definitely been... 79, 86 is not a huge increase, but... yeah, it's been back and forth. It's been in the 80s pretty much.
Are there parts of first of all, let's talk about the type of killer whale that's is the word indigenous to our area?
Yeah, they're indigenous. There's actually three types of killer whales in Washington State waters. There's the offshore whales, which obviously live offshore, which rarely come into the inland waters. There's another group called transient killer whales, which are the mammal-eating killer whales. They're the ones that are eating seals, dolphins, porpoises, deer, all sorts of strange things. They're here frequently, we think. Usually travel in much smaller groups, harder to see. But the whales that everyone's most familiar with are the southern residents, and they're exclusively fish eaters. And the more they study them, they really realize they're particularly focused on Chinook. They usually travel in much larger groups. If you ever see a billboard or a photograph of killer whales, it's usually one of them. Mm. They're the ones that people in the San Juans are seeing during the summer. You see them in the South Sound during the winter. See them as far south as Monterey in California in the winter, and probably as far north as almost Alaska. So their core area during the summer is here. J-Pod, which is one of the three pods that's part of this population, spends there. As far as we know, their entire life in Washington State waters, so they're pretty much year-round residents. Whereas K&L pod frequently spend long periods of time outside of Washington State.
So, who's the target clientele or person or group that your organization serves?
It's obviously mostly elementary school students, although we have worked with older kids. But predominantly, it's elementary school age students, usually second through sixth grade, although most of them are probably around third or fourth grade, and their families. So we're not particular about which schools we go to. In the past, we used to have a financial component with it. The school had to have a certain percentage of their children enrolled in free and reduced lunch, but we got rid of that requirement and just made it that if the kids went home and made their homes orca safe and did the activity we gave them, we'd visit their school no matter where they were in Washington State and no matter what the constituency of the class was. So it's kids.
So do you have an approximate number about how many kids that you've done? So has the program been in existence since 2000?
Yeah.
So that's 11 years. Do you have any idea approximately how many kids?
We crossed probably 50,000 total kids this year. 9,960 kids this year alone. We usually do about 8,000 in Washington. That's kind of the level. And then 1,000 in California and 1,000 in Oregon. And that's pretty much maxed out. I mean, I feel really good about the program we can deliver to that many kids without feeling too strapped. And that's good because that's usually, you know, that's an easy number for us to reach.
Hmm. So I think it's for some of us that care about this kind of thing, which I do. I remember when I met you, I met your wife in a different venue, and then I found out about you, and I was completely amazed by it as soon as I had heard about it. And so it's easy for me to say, but why is this important and what benefit does it serve?
Well, I think it's important, and it hit me today. I had to take my son to the doctor. I took him to the naturopath, and there was a book. Was it a book or a magazine? It was a little it was a brochure, and it was a woman's her little testimonial to how she wasn't feeling very good. And the reason she discovered was the environmental toxins that she's constantly exposed to in what she's eating and what she's breathing. And I was like, wow, well, there it is right there. I mean, we are living in an increasingly toxic environment, and you know that. You know, it's hard. I mean, we've had our son's blood tested because we had a potential lead exposure on Vashon. And it came back and he was below normal. And I was like, lead, you're below normal in your exposure to lead. And we went out of our way to make sure that, you know, he wasn't exposed to lead, but there's nothing you can do about it because it's what we're living in. It's the world that we're living in right now. And so I think the orcas serve as a great, gateway to start to talk about the environmental problems that we share. It's easy for everyone to say, oh, well, the whales are suffering from, you know, lack of food, anthropogenic noise, people generate noise, and toxins. Well, of course they are, and so are we. They're the top
of
the food chain.
And so are the other animals and stuff.
Well, the whole planet is, and it's gradually growing more toxic. And, you know, 10 years ago, I don't think I had the framework for how big the issue really is. And now it's like, I don't want to know how big it is because it's frightening.
Yeah.
So our program, I think, just it's a good way for kids to get involved in a positive way. It's not that I withhold, you know, the number of whales from them, or, you know, I don't make it black and horrible and you have to do something. But I think you have to understand, you know, the world we live in and the choices that we're making and how it's affecting an increasingly smaller planet. And the whales are perfect for that because the kids can glom on to, wow, it's the whales. I want to help the whales. But you know, I think the next thing that I point out is like, well, that's great. Well, we're helping the whales, but you're also helping everything else that lives in that same habitat. And that includes all, like you said, every other animal, but it includes us as well. So what's happening to the whales is what's happening to us. And I just think the whales are a good way to approach kids with not in a scary way, but in an empowering way to say, hey, let's make a difference. And, you know, there really are a lot of easy things we can do to clean up this place that we live in. So.
Yeah, I got to participate in one of the classes, and yeah, and it's very educational and light and upbeat and very positive. It's not a doom and gloom scenario.
It can't be. I mean, I live it, and people always say, well, how do you go on? Because I see these whales, and, you know, I saw the effects of them this summer. Those whales are hungry. They're skinny, and it's hard to see, but, you know, you can walk into a classroom full of kids, and you can honestly lay out the problem in front of them. And, you know, there's not a lot of argument. They're like, well, let's do something about it. What's the problem?
It's and funny so, how it's kids empowering. Are more receptive sometimes than the adults are, aren't they?
Yeah. And, you know, you try not to be pedagogic about it, if I used the word correctly. But you try not to, you know, tell them what to think. But I think if you give them the information, I'm no longer surprised by the fact that they almost always come up with an answer that's a positive thing to do or a positive thing to say. So I just totally believe in them, and I'm hoping that this generation, and I shouldn't say this generation, you know, the kids, as they grow up, they, you know, when they see the well, there's that connection, and then it'll always be there, and maybe they'll make stronger and more positive choices as they get older than maybe my generation did and the ones before us. Who knows?
Yeah, well, that's all we can do. That's why we're all doing the things that we're doing.
Absolutely. Right.
Is there any way to judge the impact that this program has had overall over the last 9 years?
We do
11 years, I apologize.
Yeah, 11.
11, yeah.
We keep we have a strong evaluation process. We do a pre and post test, so I know what the kids are getting in the short term from my visit. We also keep track of all of the results of what the students are doing at home. So yeah, I've probably got about 7 strong years of data about what the kids have done for the whales.
Yeah.
And of course it's over the short term, and we've had some discussions about, well, how are we going to monitor the long-term success of our program? And in some ways I could do a presentation in September and then go back to school in May and see what the results are if I did the same thing with them. I think the harder thing is going to be do is to track it over years. And that's just given the nature of our audience. It's going to be hard to check. But I mean, I always tell everyone, if the whales are still here when my son wants to go to the beach, then,
It's been successful.
Yeah. You know, and I always laugh and say, well, on my tombstone, it'll at least say I tried. So, I mean, we're definitely trying to measure what we're doing to see if it's effective. And I think so in the short term we are, but ask me in 20 years if there's still 86 whales here, then
yeah,
I'll have a better sense.
Well, I think, you know, in general, one of my rules about my life is to just follow my heart and, you know, my conscience, and do what I think and really believe to be the right thing. And I think the action is likely to be a lot more powerful than actually all the data.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course. I mean, data's dry. It's taken me 11 years to be able to read scientific studies without falling asleep. But yeah, absolutely.
Is there anybody, so you're, what, about 7 and 8-year-olds? Is that around the age, around there?
Yeah. So second grade would be roughly 7.
Yeah.
So third, 8th. Yeah, seven, I mean, up around 10. I guess 10. With 10 would be the average.
Have you ever come in touch with somebody like, you know, like 10 years later, now that it's been, so they'd be 18, 19 years old, and found anybody to be really?
I mean, of course, it's a handful.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are a handful of students that I've worked with. In fact,
well, all it takes is a handful of people to make any kind of difference.
Yeah. Well, and she's studying to be a midwife.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But she, as a kid, went through the program. She went, and we used to do outdoor. We still do this year. We do outdoor programs too, where we take kids out and turn them into scientists and collect real data and turn that data over to the scientists. So she participated in that. And I mean, it's funny to say, but yeah, she's a junior in college now.
That's gotta be kind of neat.
I've known her for half her life, and yeah, I mean, there's a handful of kids who one of them stood up at a public meeting in regards to the boating behavior around these whales, and I mean, I couldn't have been more proud of the kid to stand up, and some of the stuff he said was so much more informed and eloquent than half the adults that were there. I was like, okay, so the program is working.
Yeah, no, that's really cool.
Yeah, I was proud. Well, somebody else came up to me, and she said, well, you know, you see my former interns, what she said, and then you have your guy stands up and he just knocks the ball out of the park. And it's like, I didn't coach him to say anything. He's just stood up and spoke from his heart. And
yeah,
I'm like, that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, that's so really cool. My niece, who just graduated from college, is doing some really special stuff down in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And we've been pretty close, you know, our whole lives. And when she was like, you know, 7, 8 years old, I would have never imagined that she would be taking on the world that in the capacity that she now is. It's really exciting.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I think there's a lot of hope. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that's scary, but boy, I tell you, the kids that are coming along now, I think we need to keep the door open for them and step out of the way.
In a lot of avenues, they have a much more open mind and stuff, like you said, that we did and the people that came before us in a lot of ways,
Well, and I think a lot of that's because of the adults that are in their lives. I think maybe our generation is asking the questions, but listening more.
Yeah.
Well, I think we know more. When I grew up, we didn't know half this stuff. We knew lead was bad and DDT, of course. But, you know, other than that, you know, we had no idea the long-term impacts of some of this stuff. So they have a lot more current information than I think we ever were exposed to. That's a bad word to say. But I just don't – I mean, I had great teachers growing up. But you know, the depth and the understanding I think we have of this issue now is much greater than when I was growing in the 70s.
There's a lot more, or is it a lot less or more transparency? Like, I think it was more like out of sight, out of mind for us. And before us, there was a lot of stuff that was really bad going on. But I think we were talking beforehand about the pros and cons of technology and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of that stuff is out there.
Yeah,
in a manner that it never was before, and that's the upside of it.
Well, I've been blessed with, you know, being in having relationships with some pretty gifted women who, well, and men, but, you know, that stuff you're talking about was in my medicine cabinet and was in my under sink area, and I'm like, I never even thought to ask, you know, and these, it's the two women, I mean, they were just like, what are you talking about, you know, and they pointed me to the information, and you're just like shaking your heads like, holy cow.
Yeah.
You know, why is that even in here? And now I'm the worst because we'll go somewhere and I'll just be like, oh boy. So.
Yeah, well, thank goodness. You know, sometimes we need a good shakeup in our life to really do something.
Oh, I did. I used to laugh at this, one of my former girlfriends, because she wanted to go to PCC. And I was like, are you crazy? You know, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, boy, she was way ahead of the time. Yeah. So.
Now you understand. Now you're like the hippy-dippy dude, huh?
I'm the hippy-dippy dude. But I actually thanked her. I mean, it was a year or so ago, and it's been a long time since we lived together. But I was like, you know, without her, I would have never questioned. You know, I would have just gone and kept buying what I was buying, and without asking, well, where is this coming from and how is it made? And some guy was selling vinyl windows the other day that came up to the house, and I was like, do you know how that stuff's made? And he had no idea. And no one ever asked him, and he looked at me, and he's like, wow. No one's ever asked that before. And I'm like, well, do you know? And he's like, no. And I said, you ought to look into it. I mean, if you're selling it, you should know where it's coming from. So, you know, I don't want to be preachy, but at the same time.
Yeah, no, I'm right there. I would do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing I know that I feel about the killer whale tails is there anybody else that's doing anything like this that you know of anywhere?
Well, the Seattle Aquarium has their Orca Family Center. Whale Museum in Friday Harbor has an educational program. Vancouver Aquarium, Port Townsend Marine Science Center, Orca Network. I mean, there's people doing things, but there's no one that's out on the road that I know of that's actively getting kids involved. One of the best things that's ever said about the program was a teacher said, well, it's like bringing the field to the classroom. I mean, the kids can't afford to go on field trips much anymore. But I can bring the field to them, and so they get a field trip in the classroom. So, no, not to the level we're doing it, even though there are a lot of people that are definitely orca educators out there.
Yeah, I like that quote, bringing the field to the classroom.
It's fun. I mean, and that's part of the program is, you know, we update our video and our audio and our pictures, so the presentation's always up to date. But, yeah, I mean, I want the kids to experience the whales as I experience them, and for most of them they can't get to the San Juans or they can't get to the beach, but you know, heck, they could be 200 miles away from the sound and they're still making an impact to help protect it. So
I've been in Seattle 9 years, and I do remember like almost nine years ago seeing some killer whale down off by Lincoln Park and stuff, and that was like the last time. And when I went into your classroom, I think it was about a year ago or so, when you were giving one of the presentations, it really made it a lot more like real for me. I'm like, wow, I forgot those things are like, you know, right down the street swimming around.
Yeah. And, you know, particularly during the winter is when you're most likely to see them. But yeah, you'll see the transient killer whales any time of year. We've got humpbacks returning to the area. We've got gray whales here. As I told you earlier, there's, you know, a couple common dolphins, which are incredibly rare this far north in these cold waters. So things are changing, but yeah, this stuff's around. I always laugh because I just, like you said, you forget that it's there and you don't look for it. But when you look for it, it's like, wow, where'd all the animals come from? Because they're there.
Yeah. What about overall? So, you know, whales are something that are familiar to like pretty much every area of the planet where there's ocean water.
Sure.
What is the general consensus on the overall whale population
of killer whales?
Let's start with the killer whales.
Well, I think overall, depending on what part of the planet you're on, I think they're living at a sustainable level. I mean, their population's probably fine. I think Puget Sound is an area for concern. Obviously, there's only 86 of them left here. You do have other, you know, other species, like even in Hawaii, the false killer whales are on the list for potential inclusion as an endangered species. It's hard to say. It's so very dependent on where you're at, and it's so hard to get a baseline of what was there to say. Well, what's, I mean, we don't even know what the baseline is here in Puget Sound. I mean, how many whales were here historically? I mean, I've heard estimates from 120 to 400. Who knows? I mean, maybe 90 was all that was here.
So it's likely that could have been the maintained level for a long, long time.
Huh? I would seriously, I mean, I'm not an expert by any means on that, but I would be so surprised. I mean, given the, you know, the fish abundance in this area has changed dramatically, I think the potential's there for, you know, probably at least 120 to 200.
I mean,
there's a population of killer whales up in northern Vancouver Island called the Northern Residents, and they're distantly related to the Southern Residents, although they no longer interbreed with each other. But they're at around 200.
Wow.
Obviously in a much more pristine area. The Southern Resident whales that we see obviously are living, you know, offshore of Vancouver, Seattle, Everett, Victoria. So I think they're probably more hard-pressed than the rest of the killer whales around the planet, but...
Are there any other particular areas anywhere on the planet that you know of that are like, you know, we consider the Puget Sound an area, any other areas where the killer whale or whale population is really, you know, in a crucial state where people are really...
It's not that I'm aware of. I mean, I think there are certain populations around the world that aren't really well understood. Yeah. We don't, you know, they're not as photographed, they're not as studied. I mean, these killer whales are the most studied group of killer whales on the planet. I mean, they're pretty much the baseline for everyone else, but there's definitely populations of killer whales that are very poorly understood. So there could be some that are in much worse shape. I know the one, there's a group in Alaska that are in particularly poor shape. There's less than 10 of them left.
Wow.
So, I mean, there are definitely groups that are in much worse shape than ours, but not nearly as exposed to the public eye as the group that swims off the water here. So,
yeah, it's very interesting stuff. So what is the mission statement of yourself or of your organization?
Well, the mission statement's pretty much just getting students involved with the conservation of Pacific Northwest killer whales. We're focused mostly on the residents, but I wanted to leave it open to the other types of killer whales that are in the area. But I mean, that's it. We want to get kids involved in the conservation of these animals. And so far, I think we're doing a good job. I'm happy with the success we've had.
So how does one go about retaining the services of your group, and what are the eligibility requirements in order to do that?
It's easy to get a hold of us. They can visit our website at www.killerwhaletales.org. They can also email to admin, which is just admin at killerwhaletales.org, and let us know that you're interested. There's a registration packet and information sheet right there on the website, and it's pretty much first come, first serve. We just go with whoever sends us a registration form, and off we go. And as like I said, there's really no requirements for any school or organization as long as the students are willing to follow up with doing the conservation activity. So we bring all the supplies, we bring all the worksheets, all the photographs, everything you need, but we just ask that the students, in lieu of paying tuition for this program, that they go home and make their homes orca safe.
So, yeah.
We've already got, probably about 1,500 students registered for the 2011-2012 school year. So we're already about a quarter full, and obviously it's the middle of July.
So you go for about six, you shoot for about $6,000 a year, and
eight grand in Washington, and then $1,000 in Oregon and $1,000 in California. But I think the numbers there in California and Oregon will go up. It'll take a couple years, but I wouldn't be surprised if we have two satellite offices or at least two big trips a year to cover the kids in those two other states. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So are there service or volunteer positions available within the organization? And if so, how does one get involved, and what are the requirements for the eligibility around there?
Are you breathing? We're actually putting together a volunteer group. And volunteer that we ask, there's no requirements. I mean, anyone who's willing to help out, whether it's a couple hours, you know, helping to sort orca cards, which we give out to the kids. Occasionally I take volunteers into the classroom. We use a lot of volunteer help when we have our fundraising events, which we have coming up. There's plenty of opportunities, and oftentimes people will come to me and say, "Hey, I'd love to volunteer, and I have an idea of something I'd like to do. Can I do this for you?" And in this case, we have somebody, hopefully from the University of Washington. Their students are going to come take a look at our program and do a complete evaluation of it for their work. So it's volunteer for us, but we're going to get a really nice outside view of our entire organization out of that. So if you have a passion or you have an interest in whales and you want to help out, I'll be glad to link you up. And once again, you can contact us through the website or through that email address I said earlier. So
yeah, cool. So outside of getting directly involved with Killer Whale Tales, how might one go about making a difference in the areas that you're focused on and committed to?
Well, I think it's all about information. First thing I do is take a look around my little neck of the universe and see what it is you're doing in your life and the impacts that it's having. And chances are you're doing some things that you could change probably quite easily without really thinking about it. There might be some other things you really need to think more deeply about. Or you might be surprised that maybe you're living a pretty, you know, a pretty clean existence already and you can just pat yourself on the back. But I think making big changes and getting to the whole universe, or I shouldn't say the universe, getting the community to change, I think is hard, but changing the community at your home is the way to go. There's just so many things that we can't, I mean, we can vote and we can vote with our wallets, but I think there's some things that are so big that the best way to handle them is just not participate. And like, you know, running into you with the lead-based paint, you know, it took my appreciation and understanding of what that entails to a whole new level. And if it wasn't for these other women, you know, in my life, like I mentioned earlier, it's like I may have not even asked the questions. I may have just been the person who said, "Oh yeah, whatever the cheapest, easiest way is." But usually the cheapest and easiest way is offloading all of that impact straight into the environment, if nothing else.
It's it can work with some things in our lives, but not things of such dire magnitude.
Yeah,
like our health and safety.
Yeah, absolutely. And having a kid, you know, obviously I was an older parent and I probably was a much better informed parent than I would have been 20 years ago. But I really think about things about, it's strange. It's everything from how we operate our vehicle to the food we're eating to the products we're buying and I'm really interested in where stuff's coming from and how it's made. And, you know, it's a good way for me to live, but I don't want to be preachy, but I think if you just ask questions and start digging deeper, you get into the meat of what's going on and you're much better, at least a much more informed decision maker than you would be otherwise.
It doesn't sound so preachy to me.
I try not to be preachy.
I think that's pretty much the point of this, our particular program here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this is a pretty serious issue and trying to like dance around some of the issues isn't necessarily
right.
Such a good, you know.
Right, and I've tried really in the last couple of years not to be too preachy and
you gotta
to dance
have a
around.
Fine line. It's like the fine line, especially involved with you know the schools and the different organizations that help fund you and stuff. You don't want to come off as being
well. I've offended a couple people, but you know I've had a couple of I've had a couple parents who've been offended by the at home activity we ask kids to do, but. You know, it's 50,000. So, in other words, I'm not upsetting enough people is what really it boils down
to. And if you don't upset at least somebody, then I don't think you're doing the right thing.
Yeah. And it's hard because it is education and sometimes it's not comfortable. I know. I experience it all the time. It's not comfortable to deny what I want right here, right now. But that's not how it was brought up.
Well, you're doing a good thing. Oh, and I wouldn't leave the universe out of the conversation either because eventually it all trickles down or trickles up to the universe.
Right. Well, the universe knows what it's doing. I mean, the planet's good. She's good at taking care of herself. And, you know, whether or not we'll be around to see her, you know, her take care of us is, I guess we will be able to see it, but yeah.
But in the meantime, we do the best we can.
And I think we are. I mean, I see kids, you know, kids who never see a whale go home and send back a sheet. It says, "Hey, here's what I've done." And, you know, okay, maybe as little as shutting off some lights or turning off their water more frequently, but they care and they're making a difference. And that, to me, is the most invigorating part. And I think if you give people information, you know, in general, they will make a strong choice. So there's the mission right there again.
Right on. So we're here once again with Jeff Hogan and KillerWhaleTales.org. We're going to take a really quick break and be right back on Healthy Homecast, episode 19.
You are listening to Healthy Homecast.
Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe. With naive mind shield like a helmet, they would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue disillusioned little.
Okay, so welcome back. So this is the part of the this is the part of the interview where we really get dig deep down and get into the the heart and the soul of the participants. This really, I feel that the reason we developed this way is to really give people, you know, outside of ourselves, an opportunity to see where we really, really stand in life. So who or what has had the greatest impact on your life and has influenced your successes?
Oh, man. Okay, so not a hard question to answer. Oh, I think it's so varied. I mean,
there's no wrong answers.
There is no wrong answers. It's so varied. I mean, I've had some really great teachers growing up. I'm obviously the product of a public school education, but I had a lot of great teachers growing up who pushed me to ask the questions and to, you know, dig deeper into things. So a lot of the credit goes to them. I mean, I had great parents. I had a lot of opportunities as a kid growing up to see the country and to experience things. And obviously that initial trip to California when I first saw Killer Whale, you know, Killer Whale Tales probably wouldn't have happened.
Mm.
And I don't, you know, my parents weren't like trying to show me anything other than a good time. But, you know, some of those formative lessons formative things I saw came from them. And I guess we can go back one further generation. I had some amazing grandparents too, who took me camping frequently. And exposed me to being outside and to seeing, you know, this amazing planet we live on. And then my mom's parents, I had a grandfather who was a dreamer and a builder. I mean, he built airplanes, and part of his stuff he built was part of the first Viking landers on Mars. So if you could dream it, you could do it. So, I mean, I'm a combination of all of those things. But, I mean, right now I think there's two people that are pushing me, and one would be my wife. I mean, she's opened my eyes to stuff on many, many levels. And then my son, you know, everything's new again. So I get a chance to reexamine everything and every choice and every day and every moment because of him. And that's been illuminating.
Mm.
And, you know, that's a good balance between the two of them that, you know, I've had a good guide in her, but I have someone to practice on. And of course, I think you learn subjects better when you actually have to teach about them. So I'm a kind of a blend of everybody.
So what do you see as the main responsibility we have to ourselves during our lifetime?
Ourselves?
Ourselves.
Oh, God. Somebody just asked me this at the West Seattle Street Fair last week. They wanted to give me a Bible. But that's kind of the same question. What's the responsibilities to ourselves? Well, I guess I would just... Well, I can only speak for myself. That you live honestly. You don't afraid to admit that you're wrong. And that you're willing to listen and act on what you hear. And I don't mean just, yeah, I heard you. But I mean to really deeply listen to someone else and what they have to offer. And try to understand things from their point of view. And at the same time, still be able to go forward and make a decision that might not be in line with what everyone else thinks. You know, because the popular answer necessarily isn't always the right answer. And to be able to stick to your guns and do what's right, even though everyone else may be thinking it's wrong, I think there's a lot to be said about that. But at the same time, be willing to admit, you know, when you're wrong and, you know, make changes And I've been wrong plenty. But I think that's the biggest thing we can do is just be open to it. And be open to life. I mean, if I hadn't been open to just this kind of crazy idea that Killer Whale Tales was, this whole program never would have started. But that goes back to a lot of training I had in other forms of theater, of just being open to other people's ideas and offers. Even if it's the universe handing you something, you got to be willing to listen for it.
Nice. So what do you see as our responsibility to all of the other life forms on our planet? Not just as well as the whales, but everything else.
Well, I think we have to understand that, you know, it's their planet too. I mean, they're here for the same reason we are, which is to, you know, eat, live, lead productive lives. Productive is maybe not a good word, but, you know, live fruitful lives. And I don't think we have the right to take that away from them. It is their planet. I think we need to live in harmony with them as well as we try to live in harmony with each other, which we don't always succeed. But, I mean, it's their world. And in many cases, in this case, the killer whales were in this part of the world before humans probably ever were. So they predate us. And we had probably a much different relationship with them as humans to that species in the past. But, you know, I think maybe in the past we had a much better relationship with the planet as a whole. We realize that we're a part of the thing, not above it and on top of it. And everything else is subject to our whims and desires.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've always been trying to figure out how we as humans became so bold as to think that it's our planet.
Yeah, I went through a whole period of getting into mythology and religion, and it's like, where did that disconnect happen? It start with farming, and you know, when we finally stopped roaming nomadically, and then all of a sudden, oh, we're in control of everything now. Is that where that started? But boy, we got to get back to realizing we're just a piece of the puzzle and not the whole puzzle.
There's many of us that often think that we're actually in charge.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So what groups or organizations do you proudly support or are you affiliated with?
I mentioned a couple of them. We work with Orca Network, which I think does a great job of disseminating a lot of information to a lot of whale-interested people. We work with a group called the Whale Trail here in West Seattle. They're based in West Seattle. And they're putting together a map of land-based whale watching sites, which is great because you want to get feet on the beach and you want people to see these animals. And we live, like you said earlier, here they are. They're always out there. We just, you know, we don't look.
Yeah.
We work with the Whale Museum. It's a Soundwatch boater education program. I've actually worked for that program. And very proud of that relationship with them. And probably one of our biggest supporters is the Seattle Aquarium. The education director there, Kathy Sider, we both lived on Vashon. She still lives on Vashon, but she approached me and said, hey, we wanted to put together an outreach program for killer whales, and we found you, and we figured, why repeat what's being done? Let's just partner up. And I thought, wow. You know, here's the Seattle Aquarium, which is arguably the biggest, you know, aquarium in the Pacific Northwest, although Oregon would probably disagree. But, you know, they put their thumbprint of approval on my program pretty early, and it's been a great relationship. I've definitely, I think both groups have profited. I hate to use that word, but we've profited in a non-financial way, I guess, and financially, from working together. So I have a lot of respect for them. And I think the Port Townsend Marine Science Center, I have a beginning relationship with them, and I'm really excited about what they do and the way they handle things out on the peninsula. And of course, last one has to be NOAA Fisheries. I know the government's been getting a bad rap lately from certain folks, but as far as actual scientists doing the work, and that work leading to some sort of protection for these animals has been very commendable.
NOAA, how do you spell that?
It's NOAA. So it's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Yeah. Okay, I thought so.
It's a little tongue-in-cheek, right? Yeah. NOAA and oceans. I kind of put that together the other day. But they've been great. Very supportive of the program from day one. And, of course, we support all their efforts as much as we can.
So what's the best way for people to check out what you do or to contact you, which we will post on the site?
Yeah, sure.
The episode.
The best thing to do, I think, to get, you know, just an initial overview, what we do is to visit the website at killerwhaletales.org. I'm always game to bring guests into the classroom, and schools are usually pretty open to that. And if you want to bring Killer Whale Tales, if you have a student who's in the school, or you have a neighbor, or you know a kid or a teacher, contact us through the website, because I'd love to come and visit their school. We're pretty easy to get a hold of.
Yeah, and if I recall, there's like some footage. Is there some actual classroom footage and stuff on the site?
There's an NPR story that KUOW did where they came and they audio taped the whole thing. And that's on there. So you can hear kind of my story a little bit. You can hear the kids talking. There is some video of some killer whales that I shot from the beach. It's on there. But the audio story is probably the best way to just kind of get a taste of what Killer Whale Tells is like. And she did it without any narration. So it really is just like you're there.
Yeah.
It's a good job.
Cool. So you mentioned the... fundraiser, why don't you talk about that, and if there's any other events or specials or information.
Well, October 22nd, we have a fundraiser scheduled at the Duwamish Longhouse here in West Seattle, and it's our annual fundraiser where we invite everyone to come. We have a nice big party, usually have very good food, we have an auction. That's coming up. We're going to tentatively talking about doing a polar bear plunge. But instead of a polar bear, it should be a killer whale plunge sometime in January or February. So if you want to know what the sound feels like to the killer whales in February, you can come out and join us probably at Alki and experience that. We'll use that as a fundraiser too. And other than that, we're kind of just in the midst of re-examining our program right now and putting it together and updating it for the upcoming school year. So that's kind of the gist of what's going on right now. There doesn't much go on in the way of the presentations, but... check our website. We frequently post when we're going to be at special events. We're frequently at the aquarium. We do a lot of watershed festivals, so that information is readily available at the website, too.
Great. Now, when's the first class coming up here? This would be in the fall here, right?
The first class, I think, is already scheduled for the 9th of October, I think. I've got one more in August, which I'm technically throwing into last year's pool. But, yeah, it'll be October, the first week of October.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thanks so much for coming down, and it's been a lot of fun, and... it's neat to have I think it's a little bit unique just across the board for anybody.
Yeah.
And for the Healthy Homecast. And we actually end up by asking if you have any wise advice or helpful hints or last words that you'd like to share with us.
Oh, I guess say trust your gut. I think just examine what you're doing and follow your instinct and be open to new ideas and... But that's advice for living, not just about what we're talking about.
Oh, no, that's what we're talking about. We're asking about advice in general.
Yeah, I just think trust your gut and get informed. With the internet, I mean, it's amazing the amount of information that's out there. And just be informed and know what you're doing. And at the same time, give yourself a break from it. I think it can get pretty overwhelming to be with everything going on. Just take a break to get back into the woods or out on the ocean and just kind of look at this amazing planet we live on and breathe and enjoy it.
Great. Well, on behalf of Tony Freiss and myself, Daryl Whalen, we've had Jeff Hogan from killerwhaletales.org, and this has been episode 19 of Healthy Homecast. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to Healthy Homecast, brought to you by HealthyPainting.com. Your feedback is important. Please feel free to contact us with any comments, questions, or suggestions you may have, including info pertaining to podcast guests or to upcoming related events. You can call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@HealthyHomecast.com. Be sure to check back often. New episodes coming soon. All along that desert road tonight. All along that desert road tonight. See your face highlighted in the pale moonlight. All along that desert road tonight. You are by my side. Thank you.
desert low, smells like rain.